Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer at WNYC, and I'll bet you didn't know that there was an Indian chief living just 70 miles east of Manhattan, actually a lawyer and an Indian chief, and that's very relevant to what we're going to discuss. The Uncochug Indian Nation is on the Puspatuck Reservation on Long Island. 250 people live there, and their chief is Harry Wallace. He's been in the news lately on the issue of whether or not Indian retailers can sell untaxed cigarettes for use off the reservation. They're currently mired in a legal dispute with the city of New York, which claims that these untaxed cigarettes are being sold to bootleggers operating in the five boroughs, depriving the city coffers of almost $200 million of tax revenue. The chief of the Uncochug Nation, Harry Wallace, joins us now to talk about this dispute and about being an Indian chief on Long Island. I guess Henry Wallace was someone else. Welcome to WNYC.
Greetings, it is good to be here amongst my friends and relatives. I'm glad to discuss this issue with you. And I believe Henry Wallace was the vice president of the United States at one time, was he not?
I guess. Where is the Puspatuck Reservation exactly? Give our listeners some background. And how long has this been the home of the Uncochug Nation?
It's been the home of the Uncochug Nation since time immemorial. We've always occupied this territory. It was there before European contact. The reservation was actually established as a formal reservation area in the year 1700. Which was about 87 years before the creation of the United States of America. It has a long and very, very significant history. In 1791, Thomas Jefferson, who was then Secretary of State, James Madison, and William Floyd visited our reservation area and recorded a great deal about our culture and our history.
So it's in Suffolk County. It's 55 acres of land right on the water by Mastic Beach near Fire Island. How many people consider themselves part of the Uncochug Nation?
We have 250 year-round residents, and the total membership is less than 1,000.
Right. And let's get into this issue that you've got right now with the city of New York. The city is claiming that the Puspatuck Reservation owes $195 million in back taxes for untaxed cigarette sales. As I understand it, cigarettes sold on the reservation for use on the reservation don't have to be taxed, but if they're sold for use off the reservation, then they do have to be taxed. Are you disputing that premise?
Absolutely dispute the premise. I dispute the number. We dispute the premise of where it's a made-up figure. They have no evidence or any other information to verify any of this accuracy of this information.
Do you dispute the premise in the law, though, that if the cigarettes are sold off the reservation, they need to be taxed?
Well, we don't sell off reservation. They come to the land to buy, and we dispute the fact that we have the obligation to collect anybody's taxes. It's like saying, does Pennsylvania have an obligation to collect New York State's taxes?
Right.
Now the
lawyer in you is coming out, Chief.
No, that's not the lawyer. That is the essence of sovereignty. That is the essence of the ability to control what happens on your
right.
land.
But here's the legal hair that you may be splitting. It could be that these cigarettes would need to be taxed if they're sold for use off the reservation. So if you sell them to a bootlegger who comes on to the reservation, who's then intending to go sell them to New Yorkers elsewhere, then that's for use off the reservation. And if people on the reservation are doing this knowingly, knowing some of these clients are, then maybe you're complicit.
Well, bootlegging is illegal whether it's done in South Carolina, Pennsylvania, or New York. Period. And that's what we're not talking about. What they're saying is that we don't have the right to do any of it. Okay? Now, that is what we dispute emphatically and unequivocally. Now, if it's an issue of enforcement so that only personal use is engaged, we have no problem with that. We've never had a problem with that. In fact, we have initiated this dialogue with federal authorities, state authorities, county authorities. We even tried to talk to mayors are representatives in the city of New York. If you have evidence, give it to us. We will take every possible action that we can within our power to comply with what is considered tribal law and federal law.
There are 8 stores that sell tobacco products, I understand, on the 55-acre area of your reservation. How big a part of the reservation's revenue comes from cigarette sales?
Major part of it. We've been able to provide home improvement, health care, educational opportunities. We've been able to develop a community center project. We've cleaned up our sacred areas, burial grounds, and beautified the powwow grounds and our ceremonial area at the, what we call the Point. All of these are generated from fees that we've obtained through the operations of legal businesses, including the smoke shops.
That's a double-edged sword, isn't it? If you're selling so many cigarettes to members of your tribe in order to do the necessary work of maintaining the reservation, you're also encouraging them to do something that's destructive of their health.
Well, what we are providing for is health care. No one else has given us that. No one else will be worried about whether or not we have adequate health care, whether or not our children are educated properly. Education is the remedy to taking care of your body and your mind.
Is public education provided by the state not available on the reservation? Are people not eligible for Medicaid and other health services?
Well, we don't want to become a welfare economy, sir. We want to be able to take care of our own. That is the issue. Are we, the only remedy for us is Medicaid? Is that the only solution that we have available to us, is to become one of the poverty-ridden communities in New York? I don't think that's an answer. The answer is that we find a way to take care of ourselves and our own people, and we found that way. 25 years ago, this was a non-issue in New York because the tax level was not disparate as it is today. We didn't create the problem. We've always engaged in this kind of activity. Since 1600s, we've engaged in our own business entities as a matter of cultural survival. Now it becomes a problem not of our own creation. And we've talked to the city, or we've talked to the state, actually, and say, look, since you are the collector of taxes, we'll be glad to sit down with you and try and resolve this price disparity. But you can't compel us, and by force of arms, or by litigation, for that matter, to make a collection when we're not compelled to do so without consent.
What kinds of controls does the reservation place on who the cigarettes are being sold to? Because if there are only 250 people living on the reservation, these 8 store owners probably have a pretty good sense of who's going to use it on the reservation and who's coming in to buy a lot of cigarettes to go out into the city and resell.
Well, I reject that analysis. Why do you assume that everybody who comes onto the reservation is going to resell it? I think that's a wrong, that's an inaccurate assumption.
But am I misunderstanding the phrase in the law that says the cigarettes can only be sold tax-free if they're for use on the reservation?
No, you are misunderstanding it. The law states clearly that Indian tribes and Indian residents are entitled to receive unstamped goods on their reservation because they've never been taxed or stamped. Okay, the law states that the burden of incidence of tax is borne by the consumer, just like it does in every other instance. So that there is no consumption requirement on the reservation, and that's the fallacy. What we have stated is that any purchases here on this reservation, under tribal law, is for personal use only. So any individual who comes here must have that understanding.
So that's
if it is an attempt to resell, that is a violation of law.
So that's a point of legal dispute, I guess, between you and the city, whether the bottom line question is for personal use or for personal use on the reservation.
Well, that's the city has extended that to mean that you have to consume it here, and that's a fallacy. That is an argument they made up to create this impression that you have to consume everything here on this one spot.
My guest is Chief Harry Wallace. He is chief of the Unkichuk Indian Nation on the Puspatuck Reservation on Long Island near Mastic Beach. And there was a ruling that came down yesterday from a U.S. district court that is allowing the city's lawsuit to proceed. And the federal judge ruled that the land is not recognized at all by the federal government as Indian land, and yet you maintain a sovereign relationship with the state of New York. Could you explain to us how is the land recognized as an Indian reservation by the state but not by the federal government?
Well, first, let me say that we dispute the premise that the land is not recognized by the federal government as a reservation, because on the maps that refer to the Pusputuk Reservation, it refers to that as federally protected land. We are federally protected land.
But there's some kind of official status that you don't have that many other reservations do, correct?
The reservation as land has that status. What I think the judge was trying to refer to was the fact that we're not on the list of the Bureau of Indian Affairs for services, which is true, we're not. But that does not affect the sovereign status of the land. Now, the judge's decision was very narrow, at least from my point of view, in that the city made a motion for a preliminary injunction, and the judge is allowing a hearing on the preliminary injunction to go forward. At the same time, we move for dismissal on the grounds of sovereign immunity, at least the eight businesses at issue in this litigation, and the judge did not allow those eight businesses to have a hearing on sovereign immunity. For that reason, we believe that there is error in the decision. But it is a very narrowly based decision. Mm-hmm. It is a hearing scheduled in May on the issue of a preliminary injunction motion brought by the city.
Chief, I'm sure that many of the listeners in our area who had no idea that your tribe exists right here in our midst in Long Island would be curious to learn more. 250 people, I read, you can confirm that number for me or not, live on this reservation. What's the culture like? What's the lifestyle like?
Well, you know, we've been exposed, we're on the water, so a great deal of our history and culture has been based on our affinity and our proximity to the water. The Pusputuk means where the waters meet in our language. It refers to a tidal area where fresh and salt water mix and change into the environment going out into the ocean and then and from the river, which is the Forge River. So we have three bodies of water, Pusputuk Creek, Forge River, and Moriches Bay, which is right on our shoreline. As I said, this village has been in existence since long as man has been here on Long Island. Last year, we celebrated our 1,038th Wikanabindo, which is, in our language, the feast for those that have passed on. And that's in every June of the year. So we've had those celebrations continuously for over 1,000 years.
And who lives there? What kind of jobs do they have? Do they work outside? Do they, you know, commute into New York? What?
Well, the job identity has changed. We used to be whalers. Then we were involved in carpentry and construction. And now there was a lot of the jobs prior to the businesses developing were in the fields of construction and municipal services. But now some of the people have developed their own businesses and as a result of that hired their own families, provided health care for their own people, provided educational services for their own people, provided homes for their own people. So these things have changed the economy from what was a dependent society to an independent society. And that is for the good, regardless of what you think of the product that sold, and it's a bad product. There's no question about that. But it is something that is still legal in this country to do. So if you continue to allow it to be legal, then we have the right and the obligation to find a method and means to take care of our families.
All right. He is Chief Harry Wallace. Not Henry Wallace, who was the Vice President of the United States and then the presidential nominee of the Progressive Party in 1948. He is chief of the Unkichug Indian Nation on the Pusputuk Reservation on Long Island and in a legal dispute with the city of New York over cigarette sales. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We've got some other news coming out. Did Bernard Madoff act alone? Well, maybe not. Prosecutors have just brought fraud charges against Bernard Madoff's long-term accountant. And the Ed Liddy testimony continues, the CEO of AIG on Capitol Hill. Here is New York Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney from that hearing.
It is morally reprehensible, and fiscally irresponsible to expect bonus money for bringing a corporate giant to its knees and paralyzing a national economy. There are many proposals before Congress now to address this outrage. I have authored legislation which would tax at 100% any bonus compensation where the U.S. taxpayer has majority ownership of the company. This would bring back the $125 million in bonus money. Bonuses should be based on creating value, not destroying it, and a formerly great company, AIG.
All right, Carolyn Maloney, the Democratic Congresswoman from New York, speaking to Ed Liddy, the CEO of AIG. Now, that questioning is really getting going. And coming up after the news, we will play some clips of Ed Liddy. Obviously, the bonuses are in everybody's sights, but also this almost $200 billion in bailout money in a larger sense, and how much of it turns out to have gone to Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch and places like that without having them had to take a discount on the money. So we will hear some clips coming up in our next hour. Also coming up tomorrow, economist and money blogger Simon Johnson answers the question, what is a bonus? We're hearing that they are contractual obligations for AIG, but isn't a bonus extra money for a job particularly well done? Simon Johnson will try to answer that question on tomorrow's show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.